This Thursday, July the 4th, marks the return of the critically acclaimed award-winning Netflix series Stranger Things. Popular science fiction horror set in the 1980s, often dubbed a love letter to the golden era of Steven Spielberg and Stephen King. It's now in its third season. Expectations are high for a show that will need to work hard to retain the wonder and awe of previous installments. That's what Chris Wasser says about this. You obviously were a big fan of seasons one and two. For those of us who are among, and I include myself, among the pretty uninitiated when it comes to Stranger Things, what are we talking about here, Chris?
We're talking about a science fiction horror that is indeed a love letter to all things King and Spielberg that is set in 1983 in the fictional town of Hawkins, Indiana. And it focuses on a group of friends, four kids from Hawkins, Will, Dustin, their names are escaping me, sorry. So, four kids, great love
Dustin,
for...
Dustin, Mike and Lucas.
Dustin, Mike and Lucas.
And
thank
there you,
you
go,
Sean.
I
cheers.
Don't watch it.
And you don't even watch it. So, four friends who are bound by their love for all things science fiction, Dungeons and Dragons, they have literally created this safe space for themselves in one of the lads' basements where they just hang out all day playing games. And, you know, sooner or later, the day's going to come where they have to grow up. They just don't expect it to come in the form of monsters and an alternate dimension because there's a laboratory down the road, the Hawkins laboratory, where, you know, all sorts of tests are being done for supposedly the United States Department of Energy. But really what's going on is scientists are experimenting with the supernatural and the paranormal, and they're conducting tests on humans. And through that, they've inadvertently opened up a gateway to a different dimension. Mm. So that starts affecting the whole town of Hawkins. And it also, it doesn't help matters that one of the lads, Will, disappears, and he is abducted by a monster from the upside down, which is what the kids dub this other dimension. So the whole first season then is about, you know, Hopper.
This is season one.
This is season one. We're not giving anything away here. So in this first season, Hopper, the local police chief, Joyce, played by Winona Ryder, Will's mom, they're looking for Will.
Stop a wee second there, because if we just say season one, basically, just to give people a real handle on it, we're talking about a group of four teenagers, and there's a kind of, there's a connection, another dimension that brings you off to other places, and it's called Upside Down.
Upside Down.
And you're basically, you're kind of a, you're something lives inside you if you go through the upside down world.
Yeah,
special powers.
Will came back at the end of season one, but unfortunately he did have something living inside him and he had a bad case of PTSD. Second season just continued Will's story. Basically the show is just about these four kids and their families and what sort of effect this other dimension has on them, and you know, the trauma that they've gone through ever since. So we're 3 years in now at this stage.
Right, and I suppose when I looked at it today, I thought this is basically about these four kids, and there is another kid that comes into the middle of it, another person.
11, yes. 11. Played by Millie Bobby Brown, yes.
Another entity, perhaps, we should call her, that comes into the midst of this. And yet I'm told that it's not, this isn't just aimed at a teenage audience. There are a lot of people well into the 30s and 40s who are watching this. What's the attraction there? Is it, you know, are there the parents' stories as well, or is it this 1980s nostalgia that really is what's dragging people back to watch it?
It is. It's a show that kind of satisfies, you know, our 1980s nostalgic taste buds, and there's an awful lot of that going around. But it's the fact that the Duffer brothers, these are two American filmmakers who kind of cut their teeth writing for television, writing for Wayward Pines, which had the involvement of M. Night Shyamalan. He took them under his wing when he saw their first film, Hidden, which was this, you know, nice little acclaimed but very limited released psychological horror from a few years back. The Duffer brothers are basically obsessed with all things King and all things, you know, John Carpenter and Steven Spielberg.
Stephen King.
So when they were working on Wayward Pines, they were actually trying to get the movie rights to Stephen King's It at one stage. They wanted to make their own kind of big screen or even small screen Spielberg slash Stephen King type story. And interestingly that you say that it does focus on kids. When they were pitching this story for Stranger Things around cable networks at the very beginning, they could they couldn't get anyone on board because a lot of networks believe that nobody is going to want to watch a series about a bunch of kids and about a missing kid. If you know, if you're just focusing on the kids too much, it's going to be a kid show. If you're focusing on the adults too much, it's going to be an adult show. Pick one of them. They, you know, they couldn't get any involvement. But Netflix saw something in this and they picked it up. So yes, it could be something that's aimed at kids, but let's face it, it's very, very dark. It owes a lot more to, you know, Close Encounters and Poltergeist than it does to anybody who grew up on Goosebumps, for example.
All right, well, let's have a listen to a clip here. This is a group of the kids together. They're all up on the hill. We don't need to know who they all are because basically they're up here. Dustin is the main guy in this clip, really. He is a radio ham. He's trying to contact, or says he's in contact with a girlfriend at this point. So here they are all on the hill. But really what we're listening for here is the music behind it as much as anything else.
Made it.
Yeah, only took 5 hours. Why couldn't we just play D&D?
I'm so thirsty.
Did you seriously just drink the rest of our water?
My love.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. Breezy, this is Dustin. Do you copy? Over. One sec. No, she's still there. Susie, this is Dustin. Do you copy? Over.
I'm sure she's there. It's just,
yeah.
You know, maybe she's like busy.
Yeah.
It's around dinner time.
Yeah.
Here.
Susie. You copy? This is Dustin. Over. Susie, you copy? This is Dustin. Over.
A little clip there from the first episode of season 3 of Stranger Things, which starts on Netflix, showing this Thursday. Chris Wasser speaking to us about this evening. It's very hard to talk about season 3. Netflix sent us, now we often get lists of spoilers. You're not allowed to talk about this. The spoiler list on this is extraordinary. We really can talk about so little of what happens in season 3. But I guess that's okay. What we've got to sell here is what was so good about season one and two, and why does it have to live up to that? Because you say it really has to live up to
it. Really
one
does.
And two.
Yeah, that spoiler list was quite an essay. But it does have an awful lot to live up to, because that first season, as I say, it was this perfect combination of almost like a classic Spielberg film. There was a bit of The Goonies in it. There was a bit of E.T. There was also a bit of Poltergeist in there. But it also had this almost long form storytelling of like a Stephen King novel. I mean, it was quite like It. It was quite like The Body, which became Stand By Me. You know, it took its time. And looking back in that first season, which was eight episodes long, actually the second season was 9 episodes, it was perfect. You know, there was a resolution. There was this gripping finale. There were loose ends there, not loose ends that I didn't necessarily needed tying up. But you know, there was a demand there for a second part of the story. The Duffer Brothers had an outline for where to go next, so you know they kept going with it. So that second season then pushed things even darker, and it just felt like almost like a second part. But for this, I think the Duffer Brothers knew, and everyone involved, because there is such a huge fan base here. I mean, there are fan sites dedicated to supporting characters, dedicated to theories about what it all means, where Eleven is really from. People are so invested in this, just as they were with Carpenter and Spielberg films. So there's a demand here for the story not just to be a continuation, but to go somewhere new. So without giving anything away, season 3, what we're really looking at is here, look, the kids are now older. They're now 15 or 16. There's a lot to do there, because they're not going to be, if this is real life, they're not going to be the same kids that are going to be hanging out in their basements all the time. You know, some of the lads have girlfriends at this stage. Mike and Eleven are involved. We are allowed to say that. Don't worry, Sean. And we're kind of looking at what that does to the group dynamic. So for the first couple of episodes of season 3, we're just checking in on where everyone is. You know, one of the lads, Dustin, has been away at camp, and when he comes back, he realizes things aren't the way they were. Yeah. You know, they used to be. Steve, who was the cool guy of the gang, he's graduated high school. He's realised that he might be past his peak. And then there's Eleven, and I always think that
graduated high school and he's past his peak.
He decided not to go to college, and he gets a job at an ice cream parlor, and then he realises I made the wrong decision here, and that everyone's looking down at me. But I think the most valuable player, and she certainly was with the first couple of seasons, but she's really standing out here, is Millie Bobby Brown's Eleven. And what we're beginning to see with Eleven is not just, you know, more padding out of her backstory or finding other people like her. We're beginning to see a teenager instead, and a real person, one whose vocabulary is improving, because you remember she hadn't got that many lines, she couldn't really speak all that well. We're beginning to see her form friendships with other characters, you know, other characters other than Mike. It's focusing on her a lot this time.
All right. I want to also talk briefly about David Harbour and Winona Ryder, because I guess for a lot of people of a certain vintage, they will be the actors that they'll be interested in. What are their two characters, and where do they fit in? into the story.
So David Harper plays Jim Hopper, and he is this alcoholic police chief who he was married. He did have a daughter. The daughter died.
All of this happened before season 3.
All of this happened before season 3.
It's not on the Netflix spoiler list.
When we first met Jim Hopper, he was grieving. His marriage broke down after the death of his daughter, and he hit the booze hard. And he is the police chief who doesn't really care about anyone or anything anymore. And he takes the disappearance of Will Byers, who's Joyce's son, Joyce played by Winona Ryder, to heart. And along the way, discovers Eleven's existence and kind of forms this bond with Eleven. And, you know, by the end of season 2, then he became her father. He actually adopted her. And then with Joyce Byers, what we're seeing is sort of the Winona Ryder character. She's sort of the, you know, there's an awful lot of Spielberg in here. She's the Roy Neary of the piece. She is the Close Encounters character. Something has happened to her. She can't quite explain it, and she falls off the deep end as a result. And this kind of role, not only was it a comeback for Winona Ryder, but I think it fit with her perfectly because she always has that tendency to overact a little bit, and she gets to chew up all of the scenery in this. And it helps too that, you know, putting herself with David Harper, two great actors, there is a real chemistry there. I mean, it's also been teased out over the first couple of seasons that there might be a love between the two, but the two of them are very good together.
And right, so he's going to Winona Ryder. He's 11, the young girl is in his house, and he's going to Winona Ryder to ask some advice about he's seeing 11 in a relationship with another character. So here, David Harbour as Hopper, Winona Ryder as Joyce.
And then Elle, she just slams the door right in my face.
Uh-huh.
You know, it is that smug son of a bitch, Mike. He's corrupting her, I'm telling you. And I'm just going to lose it. I mean, I am going to lose it, Joyce.
Just take it down, Hopper.
I need for them to break up.
That is not your decision.
They're spending entirely too much time together. You agree with me about that, right?
Well, I mean, they're just kissing, right?
Yeah, but it is constant. It is constant, okay? That is not normal. That is not healthy.
You can't just force them apart. I mean, they're not little kids anymore, Hop. They're teenagers. If you order them around like a cop, then they're gonna rebel. It's just what they do.
Well, so what? I'm just supposed to let them do whatever they want?
No, I didn't say that. I think you should talk to them.
No, because talking doesn't work.
Not yelling, not ordering. Talk to them. You know, like a heart-to-heart.
Even mentioning heart-to-heart, they know exactly what they're saying there. That's Winona Ryder and David Harbour as Joyce and Hopper, respectively, in season 3 of Stranger Things. So, Chris Wasser, do you need to go back and look at seasons 1 and 2 to make any sense of season 3, or can you jump right in?
Oh, no, absolutely. You need to know what's going on here. A wall chart.
And is it worth the investment? You know, because there's so much stuff now that we have to, if you're going to watch season 3, you have to watch seasons 1 and 2.
It certainly is, yeah. I mean, from what I've seen so far, I've watched a few episodes of the first season. It's a little underwhelming. It's taking its time, but at the same time, I think there's been an increase in budget, and it is so gorgeous to look at. And you can't turn a corner in this series without running into some pop culture reference from the 80s. With this new run, they're hitting you over the head with 80s pop songs and film references, and, you know, this over stylized depiction of the times. I will say one thing that just worries me very briefly going forward is that I think the show is beginning to tread this fine line between homage to King and Spielberg and a bit of a blatant ripoff, because there are characters that seem almost pulled, you know, straight from Stephen King's story. So I would be a little bit worried about that. But from what I've seen so far, it's fantastic to look at. You know, the characters are relatable as ever. It's quite pleasing. I just hope that, you know, look, the setup is there. I hope that it's going somewhere, and I hope it doesn't run out of steam.
All right. Well, if you've already seen the first two seasons, you'll be there, no doubt, on Thursday evening or this weekend, probably to binge watch season 3 of Stranger Things, seasons 1 and 2. If you want to do your homework before that, all of them available on Netflix season 3 from this Thursday, July the 4th.